set.
In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Spider-Man.
I'm the best there is at what I do. What I do best isn't very nice.
The Comic Culture Radio Show. Chris Owen, Walter DeRiley.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. They hear the lamentation of your women.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting over at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter DeRiley, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your benevolent overlords.
Ruling the world of comic books with an iron fist.
With an iron fist.
Iron fist of justice.
Fury.
Yes.
Iron fist
of fury.
There's a comic called Iron Fist.
I've heard that somewhere, yeah. Apparently it's supposed to be pretty good.
Excellent. Yeah. I think it's a Marvel title.
Oh, get out of town.
Yeah, and it's been going on since the 70s, and it's been canceled 7 or 8 times.
Danny Rand is the name of the character who
Danny
plays.
Danny Rand.
Plays the character of Iron Fist. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Okay.
Starring in the titular role of Iron Fist is Danny Rand.
Are you done?
Yes,
I am. Chris, welcome to another week of Comic Culture.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about this week.
We do.
We had the Canadian Fan Expo we were both at for the entire weekend. We're going to do a recap of that later on in the show. But as always, first up, we have some of the new this week stuff.
Yes, and this week. New this week is brought to you by the MODOK Hat Company. Are you tired of stores with their tiny hats? Then purchase a proper size chapeau from the MODOK Hat Company. With sizes starting at quadruple XL, you'll always find what you're looking for.
Wow. Well, MODOK does that. He's that guy that floats around in the chair with a giant head.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And he has a hat company.
He does have a hat problem, I'm sure. But
yes.
I guess that's why he, made his own company.
Absolutely right. And and for those hard-to-fit guys.
That's right.
Or girls.
Yes.
All right. Chris, you're right. New this week. Every week we start the show with comic books. New, fresh comic books, right out of
fresh,
the printer.
Hot, right from the oven.
And they're hitting local comic book shops today, the Wednesday.
Yes.
And we're going to go over a few things that we think are interesting this week.
Yes, absolutely. And as we usually try to start off with Marvel every week,
I think
we do.
Okay. The industry leader should go first.
All right. Well, let's start with Marvel, though.
All right. Then. So I want to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 668.
Wow. So it's still going. Amazing Spider-Man is still going. In the wake of DC canceling all their titles and starting at number one, we still see Marvel going to the same old plugging away.
You see, they can't do it right away. They can't. Like, it's like copying.
Yeah, true enough. Yeah.
If they do it right away.
Yeah. All right.
But Marvel and DC, you see, they have a history of copying each
other. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And they have a history of messing with each other.
Yeah.
Now, a friend of mine, Dave, led me to a little point back in the 70s. I don't know if you'll remember this. It's going to get boring a little bit.
What else is new on the show?
Right. Marvel and DC had 15-cent comics in the early 70s.
Right.
And then they went to 20.
Yes.
But Marvel was kind of nervous, so they thought they'd throw a 25-cent giant size in the middle.
Oh, right.
And then it would be like, oh, it went from 25 to 20. That's a savings.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then I guess Marvel let it be known in the industry that they're moving to 25-cent deluxe.
Right.
Then
right.
DC followed with a 25-cent deluxe on their whole line.
Okay.
But Marvel never planned that, according to my buddy Dave. Marvel planned just the one issue, but they led DC to believe that they were switching their whole line.
Oh.
DC went with their whole line to 25-cent,
right.
And they ended up with 8 or 9 months of it
right.
before they diverted back once they saw Marvel.
Oh.
And by that time, though – a lot of kids went over to the cheaper comics at Marvel.
Sure. So, I mean, well, if the difference is 25 or 20 cents,
right.
You're looking at getting a whole other comic for your buck, right?
For a dollar. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. So these guys are always copying each other, and I'm sure that Marvel is, you know, in the meeting rooms, in the boardrooms.
I'm sure they are.
They're thinking about
the Nick Fury's, you know.
Yeah, the boardroom.
Shield boardroom. Right. Yes, that's right.
So,
yes.
So they're, you know, the House of Ideas.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's what it was called. Yeah.
Coming up with ideas.
Right. Sure. Wow, I bet they are.
But Island. Island Part 2, big storyline, very popular, doing well at the shop, doing well at shops all over the world. It's Part 2 today, but the question I got is, I mean, obviously Spidey fans are Spidey fans, but a lot of attention is over at DC.
Right. Well, this is definitely going to be DC's month. And, and I think that's our point is, you know, there's a lot of attention on DC. Is anybody really going to care about Spider-Man? I mean, other than the diehard Spider-Man fans, you know, for the casual reader who kind of goes in and picks up the odd book here and there, they're going to be completely overwhelmed, rather, with all the DC stuff.
Right, because Spider Island, that whole lead up to Spider Island was quite big.
Yeah.
And Marvel looked at it as a good jumping on point for new fans of Spider-Man and stuff like that. That kind of thunder was stolen. A lot of new people trying to dabbling into comics, are really kind of taken aback by what DC's trying to do through all the press, through all the shop talk, through all the comic shops, you know, people, they talk to their shopkeeps and stuff. And there's a lot of buzz around the DC stuff.
Absolutely.
There's going to be a lot of new people trying the JLA title.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, picking up the Spider-Man
title.
That's right,
for sure. Absolutely. Especially with a number two, whereas you get JLA number one.
Right.
I shouldn't say number two, but a number two of that story arc.
Right. But good shopkeeps will be pushing Spidey because it's a great, great storyline.
Solid storyline, for sure.
All right,
let's keep going here. We've got Justice League, the new 52, Justice League number one.
Drum roll.
This is arguably the flagship title of the new 52, DC's new story, bunch of series coming out. This is probably the number one. This is, you know, it's written by Geoff Johns. It's penciled by Jim Lee. And you know what? I took a few minutes and I read it before the show, and I have to say I was actually impressed with it. I thought the art was pretty cool. Reading the storyline, I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler alert. As you can probably understand, in this book, these characters are meeting each other for the first time. So all the people in the JLA are meeting each other for the first time.
They're meeting each other for the first time?
For the first time, because it's all – remember, this is all brand new.
There's no more continuity.
This is new continuity. They don't know who each other is. They don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden now, this is a world that's been created. It looks like that superheroes are kind of a new thing. Nobody understands who these super people are or what's going on. All of a sudden now, there's craziness happening. And much like when there's craziness happening, the government gets involved, and the police, and they're hunting down these superheroes, things like that, because they don't know what they are. They think they're a threat.
Right.
But anyways, I don't want to give too much of it away, but man, I was actually impressed. I have to say that I thought the writing was kind of cool. There are some little bits of inside jokes for people that are familiar with the characters, but if you're not, it's a great starting point for brand new readers.
Right. I am going to say I think they missed the boat on one aspect of this, and that is the $3.99 cover.
Yes. You know, I saw that just at the very end there, and I think that's a little high of a price. They could have made it ultra cheap to get people to get started on.
If they want comic books, if the new DC wants comic books to be consumable products where young guys or young adults or kids, they go into their local comic shop and grab it and roll it up in their back pocket and go take it and read it, they got to do better than $3.99.
Yeah. But you raise a good point here. Do they want comic books to be consumable, or do they want comic books to be collectible? And should they go back to newsprint for printing and make the quality that much crappier so that it's the printing costs are less and all that kind of stuff? Or is this just now they've decided that this is just a collector's market, so let's just keep it at, you know, $3.99, $4.99, whatever it happens to be?
Right. I good question. I don't know. I do think, though, that the slick paper, there's no going back because of the quality. Just because the quality of presentation is there doesn't mean it's automatically collectible. They should try to get costs down on the quality paper and still make it a price that it can be just a consumable and – you know, just like your regular monthly or weekly magazines that you pick up. You read them, you enjoy them, you throw them in the, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think this is. I think that they've actually done the smart thing here. They made it expensive enough that people are gonna, you know, they're gonna want to buy it. They're not gonna be deterred too much by the price, but they didn't make it so low that. That all of a sudden stores are ordering 4 million of them.
Right.
So now there's no collectability to it. People are gonna they're gonna be all over the place. They're gonna end up in quarter bins. So they're still making it somewhat special for people that want to collect it.
Fair enough.
Anyways,
right, so just
I do recommend it. I thought it was a good read. Give it a shot. The art's great. The writing's solid. Try it out.
Excellent.
All right. All right.
Justice League number one at your local comic book shop today.
Okay. And for our last regular comic here, we've got Angel and Faith from Dark Horse.
Right.
And
of course, that's a spinoff from the Buffy.
Right.
So Angel and Faith, they get their own series because nobody's writing Buffy. Is that it? Or just to satisfy the Buffy fans?
It's to satisfy the Buffy fans. The comic is actually sort of produced by Joss Whedon, who,
I don't like that right there. That's like those movies that come out, you know, executive producer Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
he really has nothing to do with it. Well, it actually harkens back. Do you remember those years ago, and this is getting old now, remember Techno Comics, where they had from the minds of like Neil Gaiman and Leonard Nimoy?
Right.
And so they came up with I got an idea. How about we got Robot Men? Oh, and all of a sudden, it's now from the mind of Neil Gaiman. We have Robot Men.
Because two other schmucks, one drew it and one written.
Yeah, but it really had nothing else to do with it, kind of thing. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, kudos to Dark Horse, though, for you know, obviously staying with the
and you know what
the whole Buffy franchise,
the art, it suits the comic. And Christos Gage, who's the writer, he is a solid writer. He's written for DC and Marvel. He's a good writer. I actually like the guy. I think he's pretty good. So you know what, I think it's solid for what it is. I don't think it's going to attract new readerships to people who don't know who characters are, but it's certainly going to continue on for people who
the fan base.
That's right.
And in the words of the great Chris Owen, it's solid for what it is. And that's all that matters, really. All right, Chris, what else do we have? We have this week's kids' pick, don't
we? Yes, the last pick of the week is Walt and Chris's kids' pick of the week, and this is Jughead Double Digest number 173.
Jughead's Double Digest number 173. And please pick it up at your local comic book shop as opposed to
the grocery store. Although, but you know what? This is where a lot of people get their first comics from, right? From the grocery store.
Yes. But pick this one up at your local comic book shop. Please.
Oh, Walt, you're too funny.
All right.
Hold on. Just give me a second here.
I'll tell the people that is it for this week's New This Week. Please head into your local comic book shop. Oh, we should also note that your New This Week selection will look a little sparse this week, and that is because the only DC title shipping today was the JLA, and I believe there was one.
Oh, I think there's
Aftermath.
Flash or Flashpoint or something.
Flashpoint. So very little pickings from DC. The onslaught starts next week, but tons from Marvel, Dark Horse, and all the other boys.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get a little title here going from our favorite Spider-Man. We do, of course, enjoy the old Spider-Man TV series, so let's give that a try.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, Chris, Spider-Man turned off the dark. You know what they needed? Forget about Bono. Forget about the Edge. They should have hunted the nursing homes, checked out, found those old boys from Krantz.
Absolutely.
And got them to score the Spider-Man.
That would have been awesome.
That was just dynamite.
Who needs the Edge and Bono when you got those old kooks?
Yeah, absolutely. Their kids probably could have done a better job.
Exactly. Yes. All right.
All right, Chris. Again, a great segue into industry news. And industry news this week.
Oh, industry news this week is
brought to you by, I'll take over, Chris, right. Thanks.
Sorry.
By the Max Rebo Band, available for parties, bar mitzvahs, and rancor executions. Why not hire the Max Rebo Band, the swingingest band in the desert?
That's good. Well,
I have no idea what that means.
That's, you know what, the Max Rebo Band, they were from the Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Oh.
And have you seen Return of the Jedi?
Years ago.
Okay, well, Max Rebo was the guy, he looked like a big blue elephant kind of thing.
That was, wasn't that Jabba the Fett? Was
his name? Jabba the Fett. That's awesome. That's awesome that you just called it Jabba the Fett. Not Jabba the Hutt or Boba Fett.
Right.
Jabba the Fett.
You know what I meant.
Yeah.
The big fat guy.
Yeah, and a different fat guy.
Okay.
There's two fat guys? You know what? That's the great thing about Star Wars is they don't discriminate. They have fat
there's
guys.
There's a lot of quadruple X's in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, good. All right. So rank Max Rebo Band.
Yes.
Check them out.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's dive right into industry news. And this morning, our producer, Anthony Falcone, sent me a link to the new Ghost Rider movie trailer.
Yes.
What the heck was it called? Spirit of Vengeance.
Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
That's
yes.
the movie coming out, I believe, early next year.
I'm just amazed that they're actually doing another Ghost Rider movie.
Yeah, so
this
was
is,
I.
This
That's
is
what I saw.
Unbelievable, right?
Now, you know what else was amazed when I saw this, too? So here I am. I click on the dumb thing. And there's these two schmucks. They're talking. And they go, hi. We're the producer and director of the new Ghost Rider movie.
Right.
And we welcome you to the exclusive iTunes premiere trailer.
Oh, wow, my goodness.
I know.
Wow,
like it's some sort of big thing.
Well, I suppose it is for them.
So iTunes must negotiate. Hey, it's going to be a crap movie. We want, we want to debut the trailer here on our
absolutely,
site.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yes.
And, so anyway, they do it. And it looked cool. Like it always does in a trailer.
Yeah, but now weren't you saying, though, that there's a bit of an issue with the part of the ending scene?
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
We got a lot of spoiler alerts today.
We don't have, like, we have that backup.
Clang, 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 clang,
beep, 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 but that's not
clang, 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 clang.
Right, spoiler alert. Where the heck was I? Oh, yeah. Okay, so...
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. Yeah. So, spoiler alert, at the,
clang,
at
clang,
the
clang,
end...
Clang, clang, clang,
at the end, they got him from the back, like they're filming from the back, and it looks like he's taking a leak.
Oh, okay, right.
And he's moving left and right trying to take a leak. But it looks like a flipping flamethrower. It's just shooting out jets of flame.
Now, what's that... First of all, does Ghost Rider actually have to, you know...
I don't know.
Go number one? Like,
I don't
you know.
Know,
like, really, like...
Apparently he does.
He has excess flame he has to get rid of?
You know what? I guess so. And when he does, apparently it's a bad scene for anybody in front
of him.
It's
got to be hell for dating, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely right. No. But, you know, I'm sure he's got it covered somehow. I'm sure there's Ghost Rider S's out there that are okay with that.
When you say he's got it covered, do you mean the dating
Hello.
Situation?
Okay, Chris, let's move
Sorry.
That on.
All right.
So check that out somewhere online. I'm not sure where. That's the new Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance trailer.
All right. Next up, we've got...
Oh, I love this story, Chris. When I read this...
This is great.
So Classics Incorporated is a company in Texas run by a guy named Matt Nelson, which you and I both associate with. He is a paper restorer or whatever he is. He presses comic books.
Right. Okay. So now for the layman out there, when they say they press comics, now there's a company out there called CGC who does grading of comic books, right? So if you want to know what grade your comic is, you send it out to CGC and they will take a look at it and they'll give it a grading from
out of 10.
Out of 10, like 0 to 10.
Right.
Right? I guess there's no zeros, but
0.5 to 10.
0.5 to 10.
Right.
And so obviously the better the book, the higher it gets to
the more money
10.
It's worth, right?
Now, and the more money it's worth as
right.
well. Now, when you say they press books, now what I guess part of the one of the practices that is occurring in the industry is where they take old books and they press it. So they actually press it down and to make it like thinner, crisper, so that the pages snap
like,
back.
Like spine rolls
right.
can be unrolled
okay,
through
right.
a press. Little crinks, little creases that don't break color.
So it's kind of like ironing your books.
Pretty well.
Okay.
They take a little steam, I think, and then they take a little weight and press and stuff like that, and they get these. Now, if a defect has broken color, like on
right,
the ink,
right.
you can't repair that. You can't put the color back into
okay,
that,
right,
that
right.
crease that broke color. But
and they're not putting paper back on it.
No, they're not doing anything to it. They're not adding anything to it. They're just kind of trying to press out any wrinkles,
right.
ironing out any spine rolls or anything like that. So it's not considered restoration.
Right, because it's not really being restored. Because nothing is being added to make it
right.
better.
So CGC has they have three labeling colors, but the two that are important right now, the third one being yellow for signed signature series authenticated. But the blue is the standard unrestored comic.
Right.
And the purple means there's some sort of restoration done to it. And the industry, the collecting industry, hates purple.
Right, because right? they know it's been restored.
They know it's been restored. Yeah. They don't like it. It's not authentic. It's not right. true, right? So you want a blue label. You can get a blue label through pressing.
Right.
Right. So it's like these steroids kind of in a way.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
In the old days they were allowed, but people are still kind of questioning whether they should be allowed.
Right,
so should
right.
pressing count? But for now it counts. So Classics Incorporated is running with it.
Cool.
So at Chicago, at the Wizard World Chicago Con happened a few weeks ago.
Yep, yep.
CGC did this. They only do this once or twice a year. They do on-site grading.
Right, right.
They charge you more money,
yep.
but you get your book back the next
day. Yeah, so normally you'd have to kind of send your book away.
To Florida.
Or to give it to an authorized dealer, and then they have to send it away. Or you'd even, if CGC was even there, that they would take it back with them.
Right.
Whereas here they do it on-site, so you arrive with your comic and you leave with your comic.
Yeah, they bring all the encapsulating equipment, they bring all the plastic, they bring everything that they need to do to grade your comic. But just down the aisle, Classics Incorporated, brought their huge, humongous steamer and press and iron, and they are pressing comic
That's
books.
That's awesome.
And so they would press them, and then you'd run over to Classics Incorporated, get your comic book pressed. And then you run over to CGC.
Awesome.
And get it graded.
That is awesome.
That must have just been something to see.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I wonder if it was like still hot.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm wondering if you went and you I can just see a guy running over, gets his book, 9.2, damn. And he cracks it open and he runs back to Matt and he goes, I don't think you pressed it enough. Can you do it again? Press it a bit more. And then they run back and well, listen, hey, everybody's making money.
Yep.
And I guess that's the main thing.
That's awesome. I think that's great.
All right.
Okay, next up, we should have actually done this before because it's movie related. But
yeah.
So Sin City 2 is moves ahead. So Oscar-winning screenwriter William Monahan, who did The Departed, has been hired to work on the script for Sin City 2 for Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller, who co-directed the first Sin City. So this is great. So this is another bunch of mini stories probably going to happen in Sin City 2.
Well, what it said in that story was that Miller is writing a kind of new chapter in the whole Sin City thing, specifically for this part two, something called The Long Bad Night.
Right.
Because there were 7 or 8, there was A Dame to Kill For, The
yeah.
Long Goodbye, Yellow Bastard, yeah. and I think they incorporated 2 or 3 of those
in the
first
three,
one.
Three of them yeah. in the first one, yeah.
And there were a couple that weren't,
yeah.
and everybody thought that they would go back to the ones that weren't covered
yet. Yeah,
but
it turns out Frank Miller's actually writing a brand new one.
Right. Now, what'd you think of the first one?
You know what? I thought, again, for what it was, I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was cool, too.
I thought it was neat.
I thought Mickey Rourke stole the movie.
Yep, I thought he was great. And I thought Rutger Hauer played...
wasn't he great?
I think he was great in that role as the reverend or pope kind of figure.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was great in that, too. I thought there were some scenes that were kind of interesting. Clive Owen was in it. I think he played a great role.
Yeah.
But again, that movie was taken shot for shot almost from the comic.
Right.
Right. So I thought it was a neat adaptation. But beyond that, I would never watch it again.
Right. Fair enough. Now, remember Rutger Hauer? Just reminded me of it.
Yeah.
Remember Rutger? I think Rutger Hauer played the main android that Harrison Ford was chasing down in Blade Runner.
That's right, yes. Right. Yeah.
That, which apparently they're remaking.
Yes, they are remaking that, Blade Runner. Which is kind of weird. I don't understand that. But
very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, let's keep moving it along. Always good news to see. Always nice to see. Kind of, we should have ran this one. You're right, Chris. We should have ran this one next to the Classics Incorporated.
Yeah, we're kind of out of order here.
So our friends down at Comic Connect / Metropolis.
Yes.
They had a huge auction last week for, or 2 weeks ago, for what they're calling the Atlantic City Pedigree. Some old guy bought books pre-World War II and after World War II. And then he basically just sat on them for 70 years.
Yeah, he just kept them.
And kept them really, really nice. And anytime a huge collection, an important collection like that comes from that era of comics, unbelievable prices are realized for these comics. And we want to kind of fill our listeners in just how valuable these things can be. It doesn't have to be an Action Comics number one, the first Superman.
No.
It doesn't have to be a Detective 27, the first Batman.
Nope.
It doesn't have to be an Amazing Fantasy 15, the first Spider-Man.
Nope.
It can be things like Action Comics number 10, the 10th appearance of Superman, the third Superman cover, getting $258,000.
Yeah, but let's not forget, though, the reason why these comics are getting such a high value is because the grade that they're in, right? So these were all really high grades. Like, so that one you just mentioned was a 9.0 out of 10.
Out of 10, which is almost unheard of for that age of comics,
sure,
in the late 30s. Action Comics number 13, 9.2, which is even better,
$185,000. That's craziness.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy.
What else do we
get? Action Comics number 20, $60,000.
Yeah, which is a late comic, which is a later issue.
Yeah.
I've owned an Action Comics number 19.
Yeah.
But mine was in rough shape, and I think I got $600 for it, which is good, right?
Oh, sure.
But $60,000 for a 9.0.
Well, even look at Detective Comics number 36, you know, $44,000.
Wow.
Right? So, I mean,
that's not even a special issue. That's just like a
run-of-the-mill
appearance or ninth appearance or whatever it is, a 10th appearance of Batman. Detective Comics number 24, interestingly enough, which is three issues before Batman.
Yes.
Now, Detective Comics 1 to 26 were like pulp detective stories, right? And a 7.5, which is a relatively lower grade, I guess. It's still a nice grade for that age, but it's not. It got $6,400, a little bit more affordable, I guess. But number 25, 9.0, which is nice, $10,000. But boy, once Batman hits, number 33, 9.2, $194,000.
That's craziness. Right? Just craziness.
So it's all about the character in there. But great to see that these books are commanding such price. They don't come around. They're not around.
No.
And if you're up in your grandma's basement, or sorry, up in your grandma's basement.
Up in your basement. Yeah, it's great.
Or down in her attic.
Oh, boy. All right.
And if you find a stack of old books,
bring them on in.
BigBComics.com. Just contact me, and I'll have a look.
Or you can contact me through my Mohawk website, and then I'll get a finder's fee.
Or even that. Or we can... Because I'll be taking them to Classics Incorporated.
Oh, boy. Here we go. All right. All right. Well, let's take a quick pause there for a musical interlude. And I thought we'd have a little bit of the old Green Hornet.
Another challenge for the Green Hornet. His aide, Cato, and their rolling arsenal, the Black Beauty. On police records, a wanted criminal. The Green Hornet is really Britt Reed, owner publisher of the Daily Sentinel. His dual identity known only to his secretary and to the district attorney. And now, to protect the rights and lives of decent citizens, rides the Green Hornet.
Wow, that song makes me want to hurry up.
Hurry up, will ya?
Hurry up. All right. Our next segment is brought to you by the Post-Con Distress Syndrome Clinic. Call us after your visa bill comes in at 1-800-WHAT-THE-HELL-WERE-YOU-THINKING-YOU-FOOL.
Now, this is, of course, off of the heels of the Fan Expo that we went to, the comic, big, huge comic convention, not only comic books, but horror convention, anime convention.
Horror convention, right.
Anime convention, science fiction convention, all rolled into one. And, of course, they call it the Fan Expo, and that was held in Toronto this last weekend. And it was fantastic. We had a great time.
It was unbelievable. And we're going to take this part of the show just to recap some stuff, talk about some news that were announced during the show. So we'll start with what's his name? Andrew from Comic Book Daily sat in on the Marvel announcement, I guess, and he learned that Marvel's releasing two more cross-gen titles for into print, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Route 666.
Right. Now, of course, these are titles that were initially printed by CrossGen years ago, but they went under, and then Marvel has now acquired them.
Right. And I never read Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but the premise sounds really cool. It's kind of like a late 60s James Bond spy caper type thing. And you know, it's very, which is kind of in vogue now.
Right.
Which looks cool. But Route 666, I liked. I read a couple issues
before. I really enjoyed Route 666,
But they haven't announced, interestingly enough, The Sojourn, which I think was CrossGen's bestseller at the time.
That was kind of like their flagship title,
right.
Really. That was kind of like your Lord of the Rings type.
Yeah, your sword and sorcery type of, I guess, series. But it was easily was their most popular one. They've introduced Ruse again. I don't know if it's still going or not. But interesting. I'd like to see Sojourn back.
Yes. Right. But, you know, but the thing with Sojourn, I don't know. I wonder if they would get the original artist,
Greg Land,
mm-hmm. who, you know, he, at the time he was sort of like he was a not an up and comer, but he was sort of a, you know, journeyman, I guess, at that time. And he was doing a lot of artwork for strictly for CrossGen. But now he does a lot of just covers and stuff.
Right.
He doesn't actually do interiors anymore. He might do the covers of Sojourn, but I wonder if he would actually do the interiors.
You're absolutely right, because a lot of Sojourn's appeal was the Greg Land art look.
That's right,
Which some people panned and said, hey, you know, Photoshop, whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, I enjoyed it. It was good. It was well done. I mean, you know, you have to...
And he made no bones about the fact that he used a lot of photo reference for his artwork, mm-hmm. right? Like, I mean, it was very evident. But, you know, at the same time, man, it looked great.
Yeah, absolutely. Eye candy.
Yep.
All right. Also from Marvel, we sat in on the Marvel panel. And they're talking about the season one line of comics that Marvel has coming up, which features kind of early stories of the X-Men, the Daredevil, the Spider-Man. And these companies, you know, DC with this move in September here with the 52, Marvel with the season one, it seems to be, I won't say industry-wide, but the big two player are focusing on jumping on points for new readers.
Yes, there's
a push to get new readers into comics.
Well, you know, the way they decided to do to print comics and publish comics for years now was the seven comic book story arc thing going on. So, you know, you jump on and then the story wouldn't end for seven issues, so solely for the fact that they knew they could sell them as graphic novels.
Right.
That in itself was a tough way to get new people to jump on. But they never had a lot of jumping on points even between those issues. Like, they didn't really focus on getting new readers.
Right, you're right, because let's say the old Bendis or the Brubaker lines of the Daredevil.
Yeah, okay,
it's a new story arc, but you have to kind of read the old story arc to
even figure out what's going on.
You know what I mean? There was a lot of continuity that you had to know.
That's right. And now I don't want to make it sound like, oh, back in my day, the 70s mm-hmm. were better. But, you know, the older comics, you know, pre-1980, I'll call it, a lot of them were one-issue stories. You could pick it up. Oh, here's some crazy guy in a spider outfit saving the day. I get it. It was fun. Now I can drop it. You know, and a lot of the comics were like that, where you didn't have to go from one issue to the next issue to figure out what was going on, right?
Yeah.
They were all kind of very telltale.
Yeah, and the good part about that was back then, Chris, it was way more schlock.
Oh, yeah.
Because what happens is you have to come up with a new guy on the cover each time.
Yeah.
So, you know, Spidey would be fighting some sort of disco afro roller roller disco guy in one issue, and then some sort of dancing queen on another.
Oh, it was awesome.
And then it was just like from bad to worse.
Oh, yeah, it was
right?
great. I loved it.
And then, you know, every ninth or tenth issue, and they go, man, let's throw the Goblin in there or something.
Yeah,
just,
let's
just
get
for
Doc
sanity.
Back in there. Yeah.
So you're right. It was, you can pick up an issue, either you liked it or you didn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what else did Marvel do? They're planning a big year for 2012 for X-Men.
Yep.
Which year isn't a big year for Marvel for X-Men?
True enough, eh? They're saying that they want to expand the X-Men into a greater role into the Marvel Universe. I don't know how much bigger it could possibly be already than it is already. I mean, they must have 20 titles out there right now that are X-related.
But, you know, X-Men as a franchise.
Yeah.
Is better for Marvel than any individual character like Spider-Man or something like that. You know, Spider-Man may be their guy, but X-Men has provided them with so many, you know, other guys. Cumulatively,
yes.
The X-Men world rules the Marvel sales.
Right, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So putting focus on X-Men and maybe tying in the regular you. For a while there, and I'm sure you'll agree, you were into the X-Men a lot.
Yep,
for a while there, it almost was like the X-Men were a separate universe from
for
Marvel.
Oh, for sure,
right?
Absolutely.
The FF and Spidey, they would cross over and stuff, but X-Men, the X-Men were, because they were just so strong. They were their own brand, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's good. It's like they have to re-merge.
Yeah, and one other thing too was with the X-Men, there was such a huge cast of characters that it was, instead of having to bring somebody in from the regular Marvel universe, they brought somebody in from like the X universe, and you're like, oh wow, I haven't seen, you know, Sunfire in forever,
right,
or something like that.
Right.
Like, you know, hey, I haven't seen I don't know, Nimrod or something like that.
Yeah, Nimrod. I found this interesting. So Alonzo there, He made a point of addressing comic book pirating.
Yeah, I thought this was funny.
Stating that if fans love a series, they should go out and buy it because pirating is what gets books canceled.
Is it really, though? Is pirating what gets books canceled? Or is it like poor writing?
And, yes,
you
good
know,
point.
Or poor
yes.
artwork.
Right.
Yeah. Or multiple covers and unending storylines that people get fed up with.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Or, but you know what? You know, I'm sure pirating is it's one of those things where they have to toe the party line there. They have to kind of fight pirating. Pirating is bad, I guess. Yeah. But like you say, some kid gets a pirated thing, you know, he might like it and go buy comics.
Yeah,
who knows,
right? That's right. And one last thing about from Marvel here is that they were talking about how there's not going to be any plans for a Nick Fury-centric series.
That's too bad.
Which is interesting because, really, you and I were talking before the show how all the Marvel movies that are coming out recently, basically the one tie between all the movies has been Nick Fury. And so he's becoming this really important character, yet now they're not going to do anything
like
with
Nick Fury's the Mac. He's like the duct tape that binds the Marvels together.
Yes.
He's like the glue. He's like everybody. Everything flows from Nick Fury with this Avengers movie. Nick Fury is kind of the main guy behind the scenes. Nick Fury's like that guy on Charlie's Angels, Charlie.
Right.
They'd never see him. You just hear his voice. Hello, girls. All right. I want you to go in your bikinis and figure out this crime. But no, but like, it's too bad that Nick Fury
can't seem to hold his own title.
Yeah, that bugs me. That bugs me because he's so good. He's such a great character.
Well, they need to make him more espionage-ish or something. I mean, they need to have a title like that where it's like strictly espionage. But I think that they kind of tried to do that in an X-Men-related fashion with Mystique because she was able to, you know, transform herself into anybody she wanted. So then it became like this weird sort of, you know, thing where she could become other people to try to infiltrate all the enemies and all that kind of stuff. But it wouldn't have been the same as if it was Nick Fury. It would have been better if it was Nick
Fury. Because Nick Fury can pretty well, he can rule Marvel.
Yeah.
Nick Fury can be the go-to guy for every Marvel character.
Sure.
They're in trouble, they go to Nick Fury.
Yeah.
They got no job or no assignment, they go to Nick Fury. You know what I mean? Like there's no crimes happening on my block. What the hell do I do?
Oh,
I'll call Nick. Man, he'll send me somewhere.
Daredevil ever gets upset that there's no crime in his neighborhood.
He gets pissed off. I'm sure he does.
Hell's Kitchen is so boring these
days. I know.
Days.
Well, what's he going to do? So he loves putting that costume on, Chris.
You're hilarious.
All right. So, other than that, though, I wanted to talk a bit about, now that we talk about the con.
Yes.
What you and I saw at the con.
Yeah.
And I mean, I want your personal takes on the con.
I had a great time at the convention, as I always do. I thought the number of dealer wise, I thought the number of dealers that were representing new comics was
new
extremely
comics.
Low.
Right.
So, you know, we've been to conventions in the past where people have nothing but new comics, and I don't think I saw even one dealer there that had strictly new stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, past 6 months kind of, past year kind of comics.
Right.
Whereas normally there would be at least one or two dealers that is like, hey, get this signed. Hey, get that signed. All these different artists are going to be there. This is the variant that you need to buy. You know, not a whole...
I think there was a couple. There was like Comics and More, I think, were there.
That had strictly...
No, they had other stuff, okay. I think. But the thing there, though, is it's really expensive real estate now for
yes.
any kind of vendor at Fan Expo.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to kind of... mix your product lines, try
yeah.
to snag a little bit of everybody, right?
Yeah.
If you put all your eggs into one basket, I think you might, you know, spell doom and gloom.
True.
If that basket isn't in demand that
yeah.
weekend, you're screwed,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So you saw a lot of booths and stuff with people, you know, they brought their graphic novels, they brought maybe some excess toys from the shop, they
yep.
brought their new comics, maybe they brought some old collectible comics. They were trying to mix it up. They were trying to get, you know, I saw people with T-shirts, above and beyond the big T-shirt guys. You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
there
yeah.
were booths that just had, they were like a little one-stop shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Their selection of each thing wasn't that great.
But they had everything.
But they had everything because they thought they had to have everything,
right? Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking to, I mean, it was nice to see a new vintage comics, our buddy
yes.
Roy.
Yep.
He set up shop for the first time. He had one booth.
How did he do?
He did very well. He specialized in the very high-end comics.
Right, right. Now, for our listeners, what do you mean by very high-end? Like,
well, he had a Sergeant Fury
right.
Number one, let's say, at
right.
a 9.4, which is unheard of in a grade. Tens of thousands of
yeah,
dollars
yeah.
for this comic, right? So these were the kind of goods he was
now,
dealing with.
I didn't get a chance to go to his booth, but didn't you say that he also had a Marvel Comics number one there?
He had a Marvel Comics number one. It was graded 8 out of 10, but
wow.
it was restored.
Oh, okay,
right. So
right,
it'll get
right.
less money than a regular one. But you know, this is a book. Who knows what it's worth? Tens upon tens of thousands
yeah,
of dollars
yeah.
for that book. So it was nice to see a Canadian,
yeah,
you know, a local
yeah, yeah.
Southern Ontario guy.
Yeah.
representing and showing some real quality old comics, which we're used to seeing only from the U.S. dealers that come
from the
up.
Big boys, yeah.
Right.
yeah.
And interestingly enough, the guy from Graham Crackers, Jamie.
Yes.
I talked to him a little bit.
And he has like four or five stores.
He has nine stores
nine
in the Chicago
stores,
area.
Sorry, yeah.
yeah. And he hinted that he might not be back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He the problem with these guys is when they bring, you know, the high-end quality books.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a make-or-break weekend.
Yeah,
if a small selection of buyers don't pop in that weekend for whatever reason,
yep.
you know, they have a bad con.
Or if you don't sell to other dealers.
Right, or if you don't sell to other dealers, yeah. or if, you know, three or four sales can make the difference for these people's
oh,
weekend.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Right? So it was interesting to note that Roy, his first time at Vintage there, he did very well.
Yeah.
And that Jamie, I'm sure he did well too, but for whatever reason, he didn't think he would have loved to have done better, I
yeah.
guess, and he's
yeah.
contemplating maybe not coming back.
All right, let's cut to the chase here. What did you think of all the people dressed up?
I loved some of the costumes.
Love seeing people dressed up at these conventions.
Unbelievable. It's amazing. I love seeing Submariner. I love that guy. He's there every
yeah, yeah.
with those green shorts.
You know what's great about that guy? He's always dressed up as, you know, the half-naked guy. So
yeah.
it's either Conan or Submariner
right.
or
right.
I don't know who else.
Quick change artist, that boy.
Yeah.
It was great to see that. There was some guy dressed up as like a Around the World in 80 Days balloon.
Oh, really? I didn't see that
like,
guy.
You know, what do you call it? Ballooning?
The hot air balloon?
Hot air balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Now, did you see the guy that was dressed up like the giant Shogun warrior? It was, I don't know if
I saw that
Ray,
guy.
Ray
yeah.
Dean.
Yeah, yeah.
Ray Dean. Yeah, it was yeah. amazing. It must have been 15 feet high.
It was
cool.
Yeah, I
yeah.
saw that guy. I had yeah. difficulty walking.
Yeah, and so my other favorite guy dressed up there, and or costumer, I should say, is, there's a guy dressed up like Thor, and he must have been like 6'10".
Yeah,
he was
I
massive,
saw that guy.
Just massive.
Yeah.
And he was I got my picture taken with him because I looked like a little kid
mm-hmm.
in front of him. He was
Chris,
just massive.
I got scared there for a second. I was going to intervene.
Oh.
Somebody stop me. I saw you being arrested by the 501st Paratrooper Legion
I was, in fact, but well, that was just, I was just posing.
Oh, were you?
Just posing.
Okay, because then somebody told me, no, it's just posing.
Yeah,
they had
yeah.
you down. They had
yes.
guns pointed
yes.
at you.
Yes, all the stormtroopers had guns at my head.
Stormtroopers,
yes.
sorry.
Yeah.
And they could be paratroopers.
Yeah,
it
could be,
too,
but
right?
sure.
Yeah, and I was worried there for a second, and then yeah. somebody said, relax.
Yeah. No,
relax.
That was very
staged.
Cool. That was very cool. In fact, at one point, I must have had about 30 stormtroopers walk past me. I felt like I was in Star Wars.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Great. The same, I had a story with them, too. I'm walking like a schmuck. And I'm walking, and there's a stormtrooper right in front of me. I go, this is cool. I got a stormtrooper behind me. And all of a sudden, I hear in the mic, get out of formation. Get out of formation. And there's like five stormtroopers behind me walking in formation, and I'm walking with them.
You're like some schmuck who just happened to get in.
Right. I forgot my costume or something. Oh,
that's awesome.
Man. Hey, I accidentally bumped. Well, I didn't bump. I won't lie. I didn't bump into Bill Shatner, but I accidentally was as far away from Bill Shatner as you and I
oh,
are right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I went to reserve my booths for next year.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
it was up near the con offices right yep, there, yep. filling out my form. And there's the big entourage. Bill Shatner goes in there with, I guess they're going in to plan out his signing thing
right,
and everything like
right.
that. And I wanted to go, Bill!
You should have.
Would you pay for my tables next year? All you
got
to
awesome.
Do is get 10 people to sign your stupid whatever the
you,
hell
you could have got him
sign.
To do the price line, you know, where he negotiates deals.
Right. Yeah, Bill, negotiate this for me,
yeah.
will you? Yeah. But anyways, it was nice. That was cool. I like that. I thought Diamond Industry Night was a bust.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you brought it up because Diamond Industry Night has been getting – I don't want to say it's getting worse – but and the fact that it stays,
getting worse.
It has stayed the same for as long as I can remember, which basically means it's getting worse.
Right. Well, you know what? You and I, we go in every year with the same plan.
Yeah.
We're going to go in there. We're going to be social butterflies.
Yeah.
We're going to mingle with the other shopkeepers.
We're going to talk to people we've never
talked
to before.
People we never talked before. Everybody just wants to eat their dinner and go home. They ignore
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, we talked a little bit with Jen from The Dragon,
yeah.
which was nice,
yeah.
and Rob Haynes from
also from The Dragon
at the and Schuster
and,
Awards.
And, yeah. and we tried to get John from
Neutral Zone in Niagara Falls. Talked to him a little yeah. bit. Talked to a couple guys from Quebec. But man, everybody's sitting at their own table. You feel like you're
yeah.
intruding by going up and saying hi. They're kind of expecting you to kind of say hi and then leave, and you want to you know, this should be like at a like at an Irish pub or something.
Yes,
a big long bar where
yeah.
all these shopkeeps are we're discussing stuff
yep.
and just socializing
yep.
and stuff.
There has
like
to be
that.
something has to be done that,
well, they have
that
to
they
kind
have
of
to,
they have to set it up a little bit more
yeah.
so it's easier for us to mingle, as opposed to you sit, you eat your buffet,
and then,
you get your bag and then
yeah.
you leave.
Really, you know, I know people want to sit down when they're after they've done this, you know, now 3 days of the convention, but I think the best thing to do would be to eliminate the actual full meal, have just appetizers, and have like those cruising tables where people, you just have to stand the whole time, so then it almost forces you to go up and talk to new people and bump into people, and as you're walking by you say, oh hey, how's it going, you know, all that kind of stuff, rather than just sitting down, because I don't really know how else they can fix that problem, because as you say, people want to get in and want to get out, and then they're done, they want their grab bag full of goodies, which isn't all that good, but anyways
right,
yeah
right,
it's
right. I don't know. I anyway, hopefully next year we'll just make people talk.
Okay,
to us. Hey, where are you going? We'll block the door.
What did you think of the representation by the publishers at the convention?
I never got out to that corner.
So, well, I'm
sorry. Marvel and DC,
Marvel
and
DC
stuff like
yeah,
that. Yeah.
yeah.
They approach it differently.
Yeah.
Right? Marvel
yeah.
kind of got that rah-rah Jeopardy type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, it's weird.
On.
It's almost like they're in a game show or
right.
something. Yeah.
And DC just has all those freebies, and you get that robot line of
yes.
you know 600
yeah.
people going through and picking up their
yeah.
stuff and leaving.
But all those freebies, they're all it's all stuff that has been given out before for the most part, right?
Right.
There may be one new book, but and there's all kinds of pins and buttons that
hey,
people
have. Hey,
didn't
diminish the size of the line.
No, you're absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I thought it was, you know what I did like? I liked the fact they brought and you remember the old Warner Brothers water tower?
Mm-hmm.
So they brought like a mock-up of that
it was
to the
right
convention.
Right beside the Bigby booth.
Yeah.
Right beside our booth. It was great. It was kind of like, you don't know where my booth is. Just look for the Warner Brothers water tower
yeah.
right there.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that...
I like doing that, by the way.
I like the fact that DC brought the new Batman Arkham City video game for people to test out before it comes out in October.
Right.
So I think... As far as the two big publishers, I think DC blew Marvel out of the water. Because Marvel only did, like, you know, game show type stuff. Here's a couple of free comics, blah, 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 blah. Whereas DC had, like, the full setup, giving out all kinds of free comics, giving out, you know, letting people try the new game. It was awesome. I really enjoyed
it. You're right. I found interesting that all the, you know, non-publisher type things, like LG, you know, the manufacturer, had their testing out their flat screens and all that kind of stuff. They're showing off their products. Nintendo and PS3 or DS3.
Did you see? Yeah, PS3. Did you see? I think it was. I don't know if it was PS3, but they had somebody there had the. There's a video game out there called Drake's Fortune. And Uncharted.
Uncharted
is the name of the video game. Drake is the character. Drake's Fortune, I think, was the first game. But right. Uncharted 3 is coming out, and they had a giant plane as if it was like, you know, like 20 feet tall kind of thing, as if it had just crashed.
Right.
And there was a giant set.
Yes,
and it was
all kind of done up, and you
could go up and play the new video game again. It was awesome. Yeah. It was very, very well done.
Incredible.
It almost seems like the video game people are outdoing the comic book people as far as promotions and publicity and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I liked Zeller's booth. It was just silly. Right? They had like underoos and Spider-Man pajamas and stuff like that. I thought it was cool.
You know, the only problem I have with that is they're selling stuff at the same price that you would get at any other regular Zellers.
Right.
Except now you have to pay $35 to get in for that day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, and I forgot my HBC rewards card.
Oh.
There was no way I was going to buy anything.
No, absolutely not.
So
no.
That's the problem with that. I thought getting out this year was a mess. Like the load up at the end of the con was an absolute mess. I'm not going to bore everybody with it, but basically, one guy's got to go get the truck out in the marshalling yard, and then the other guy's got to take their booth out to the docks, prove to the guy that we're loaded up, which is always dumb. Anyway, that was a mess. They got to fix that. The girl called out one of the dealer's dad was there right in front of me, and he was going, "Oh, we're all packed up, but there's no John at the dock. So how are we supposed to find him?" And she's like rolling her eyes like, "I've heard this before."
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
John is somebody. Are you on the dock? "Yes, I am, man." Sir, John's at the dock.
Yeah,
so then he gets all quiet and stuff like that. But it's always a ploy to try to get in first like that.
For
it's a mess. Chris, now, overall was a great con.
Absolutely. And you know what? One last point, though, I will say is I thought that the whole attendance ticketing way of people getting into the convention was greatly improved, right? Because last year it was a big cluster and people were getting ticked off because they were waiting for hours and hours and hours, and some people who had tickets, they couldn't even get in even when they were supposed to be able to get in. I thought that was greatly improved.
Yeah, the whole Fan Expo Hobby Star crew, Aman, Kevin Boyd, James, they did a great job fixing all that. Now, I have a top 10 list.
Oh, okay.
The top 10 ways to improve Fan Expo so it's even better.
Nice. All right.
For
I
next
like it.
Year, right?
Now, this was many colleagues and academics spent hours and hours on this list.
Even
right?
better than that, Chris. What we had at the Bigby booth, because we're conscientious, we had a ballot box where
nice.
Customers say, "Hey, how can we improve Fan Expo?"
Nice. I like
and
that.
And these are the best suggestions.
Best of the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
So number 10.
Yeah.
A Tim Hortons kiosk at each corner of the hall.
Oh, I'd feel like I'm in Hamilton.
You want to see a lineup.
Nice.
Number 9, celebs signing for free.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
And you know what? But you know what? That can be done. That's what they do in Detroit.
Detroit.
Remember when I talked to Gil Gerard?
Gil Gerard. Yeah. Problem is, we have to get Seika and Gil Gerard up here in order for that to happen, right? Okay, number 8, Lindsay Wagner.
Yeah, this is a bionic woman.
Yeah, this was a guy that suggested that he had just spent $820 getting Lee Majors to sign something, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he had more money in his pocket, basically, and he wanted Lindsay Wagner.
Well, as he should have.
Number 7. More Power Girls.
I completely agree with that.
That might have been you there.
I may have stuffed the ballot, much like she kind of stuffs her shirt a little bit. But anyways,
Number 6, less guys dressed up as Power Girls.
I only wore that costume once.
Okay. Number 5, more ATMs.
Absolutely. You know, did you see the lineups?
Unbelievable.
Those ATMs? You know, Now,
I thought somebody was signing.
Why don't people go to shows with money?
Right.
I don't understand.
Remember
that.
Remember we did that. Bring cash.
Bring cash. If you're going to go to a convention, bring cash. And yet the lineups were horrendous.
Right. Number four, a live band in one corner.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Remember you and I went to Chicago and they had a live band performing at the Wizard World?
That was dynamite.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
It was dynamite. So if you want to improve Fan Expo, get Kirby Crackle.
Yep, there you go.
A rock band that's kind of nerds and they love comics. Yep. Get Kirby Crackle performing
start
live.
Playing like, you know, the Spider-Man theme song and Batman and all
right.
that. Awesome.
Right. Number three. Cheaper booths for comic book vendors.
I wonder who put that one in there.
I wonder who.
All right.
Number two, Stan Lee.
Stan the man. You know, when was the last time he was in Toronto?
Last year.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Because you know what? I remember there was some crazy figure that about the number of signatures he actually did, like 200,000 signatures or something.
It was amazing what he did. And the con was great this year, but try to get Stan back for next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the number one suggestion I got at the booth.
Oh, I'm drum roll. I got to do a drum roll here.
Okay. The Fan Expo Beer Garden.
Nice. Yes.
It's the big tent over in the corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yep,
and,
that'd be great.
And that's where I'd be camped.
And then you could have, like, you know, Power Girl serving the beer.
Oh, yeah. The girl Power Girls, not the guy Power Girls.
Yes, the limbo. Right. Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, that's our top 10.
Do we have
time for anything else?
You know what? We've only got a few more minutes here, but why don't we quickly do the previews? Because the new previews is out this week.
Yes.
So let's talk. Let's give our previews every month. We try to do our pick of the month out of previews, and this is generally some sort of odd type of item that Walter and I find fascinating that people actually buy, let alone is created.
Right. Of course, Previews Magazine is available at your local comic book shop. This is the catalog that you order from for products coming into your local comic book shop. And I'm going to pick on page 412 of the September 2011 previews and page 413. You have the Batman and the Superman Ice Cube trades.
I like it.
Right.
I like
because you know what? What it comes down to is this. Nothing, absolutely nothing, will scare a girl out of your apartment quicker than when you serve her that nice mixed drink and she's got little Batman ice cubes floating around and Superman ice cubes floating around. Left the powder in my nose.
Make sure you put it in the Superman glass, too.
Right. So that's my pick.
All right. Well, okay. So just for a second here, do you remember the old class? We were talking about William Shatner earlier. Do you remember the old classic Star Trek TV series?
Of course. Now, a Trekkie and a half.
Of course, William Shatner played Kirk.
Yes.
And there was an episode where Kirk had to fight one of the Klingons named Kor. Mm. Do you remember that? You know,
Commander Kor.
Now, of course, the Mr. Potato Head Company has finally brought out, finally.
What took them so long?
Mr. Potato Head Star Trek Kirk and Kor set. And that is that's on page 385. So here we go. I'll read you a little bit of what it says here. This autumn, boldly go where no potato has gone before with the brand new Star Trek Mr. Potato Head toys. The first box set features Captain Kirk and his original Klingon nemesis, Kor, from Errand of Mercy.
Wow, Chris, I'm going to tell you one thing, okay? And this is the truth.
Okay.
This is gospel.
Okay. Yeah.
You're nobody. I mean, you can get pajamas made after your character.
Right.
You can have video games made of your character.
Yep.
You can have a movie made of your character. You are nothing until you get a Mr. Potato Head.
I completely agree.
Trek has finally arrived.
They finally arrived. Finally, they've done something with Star Trek.
Right. Finally.
You know, I know. I wish they had done something years ago.
All right.
But sadly, they didn't. All right. Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time here, so I think we're unfortunately going to have to call it a day.
Right. So Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For suggestions and comments, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link. Scroll down to the bottom where we have comments and comment away.
And And remember, it's always clobbering time somewhere.
Yes, and please, please support your local comic book shop.
Go out and have yourself a wonderful day. Thanks a lot for listening.